It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Good morning, campers!
Alan, Jerry, don't worry, it's only an hour long, and most days it doesn't suck.
And don't worry, it's no Alan, Jerry this morning on a Monday. What's up, CeeLo? And I got Fleegs along for the ride. Mike Fliegelman, happy Monday morning to you. And I got to tell you, Fleegs, right out of the gate here, and I understand the Mets technically lost, not technically, they did, they lost the series, but... I can't remember a better Sunday of sports in this town. You can even include Saturday a little bit as well with the Islanders staying alive against the Carolina Hurricanes. But look, it's been a rough stretch for New York sports overall. This is probably as good as we've had in quite some time between the Jalen Brunson heroics down in Philadelphia, the Rangers finishing off a sweep, the Yankees scoring a million runs in Milwaukee, a walk-off at Citi Field, you throw in the Islander win on Saturday in overtime as well. We got, and the NFL draft, by the way, we've got a lot to be happy about here on a Monday morning.
No, this is unbelievable. Like, you and I have worked here for a long time. I've done a lot of Monday morning shows, and this is... as positive a day as I can remember, because even though you're right, the Mets lost the series, but they're coming off this exciting walk-off victory. Mark Vientos, the fans love. He walks it off. Every team, and you included the Islanders from Saturday night, left off on a positive note to where we come in here Monday, and we're thrilled about the Knicks up 3-1. The Rangers swept there on to the next series. Every fan base right now can feel pretty good about their teams, and that is something that has not happened a lot, if ever.
Very rare. Very rare. And you've got your Knicks sweatshirt on this morning. I've got my Rangers No Quit New York t-shirt on. So we're ready to go. We're fired up. We're pumped. Look, the Rangers, it was almost like just finishing off the inevitable last night. And even, I mean, the series itself, and I called it business-like. And I had said after game three, on what would that have been? I'm losing track of the days. Friday? Yeah, Friday. And I was like, this felt like a... midweek game in January. That's kind of how ho-hum that series was. The complete opposite as far as the Knicks and the Sixers go. And I mean, yesterday, pound for pound, back and forth. I mean, I know the Sixers had a double-digit lead a couple of times, but I mean, that was outside of the complaining with the officiating on both sides and some of the maybe flopping that's going on and some of the antics from Joel Embiid. But as far as the basketball goes and the game itself, Brunson with the franchise record, the Knicks fans taking over Wells Fargo Center. I mean, I know it's the first round of the playoffs, but this series has had a lot of teeth to it. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
No, it's been an incredible, like, as far as first round series in the NBA go, like, think about what it's been the last 20 years in the NBA. These first round series are so often boring. They're so often, you know, irrelevant. This one is in a tough conference to teams that can't stand each other. They're division rivals. They play each other a lot each year. There was a lot coming into the series because the Sixers wanted to run their mouths in the entire lead-up to facing the Knicks and all of the stuff that's happened on the court and off the court in this series. I mean, this has been intense, especially for modern NBA standards. You know, there's all the talk about how now the players are all buddy-buddy. Everybody loves each other. They're fine.
Not,
they're all
not
friends.
In this series.
Not these teams. Not these teams. Not these fan bases. And yesterday was, I mean, if you are a Knicks fan, the way the game went down, it's this defensive effort, the grittiness, the toughness this team showed. Jalen Brunson being the source of offense, setting the Knicks single-game playoff record. And then the scenes after the game, both with Embiid crying in his post-game media scrum and the videos.
Figuratively, not literally.
Right. Well, listen, I mean, everything now, it sounds like Joel Embiid is crying.
Yeah.
The fans chanting Knicks in five at Wells Fargo Center, hearing, you know, in the game, you're hearing Knicks chants. It seems like Knicks took over 40, 45, maybe even 50% of that entire building. I mean, if you're a Knicks fan, this is the kind of weekend that I know we get so lost talking about championships and, oh, you know, does it matter? Can they win a championship? And I'm guilty of that at times. I think we all are what we do here. But
yeah,
yesterday is the kind of game, and this series, you know, you can't tell me every game, every series doesn't matter to the fans. That's beating a rival. We all can't stand Philadelphia and their sports teams, you know, and their fans. And to take over the building like that, to go in there when they think they're going to tie the series, win the game, win it in that fashion. Jalen Brunson finally takes over as the guy in a game. I mean, it's just, it is awesome to wake up as a Knicks fan on this Monday morning.
Yeah, and I mean, look, he had the scoring output in game three, and I'm not going to say it was quiet, but obviously it comes in a loss, so it's, you take less out of it. But think about the first two games of the series where the Knicks win and didn't necessarily need peak Brunson, even though they kind of, you know, won with mirrors there in game two. But any questions or any doubts or any concerns we had about how he was going to factor into the series or what the playoffs were going to look like for him, I thought he answered that and then some. I mean, obviously, look, it's a franchise record for one game. But even beyond that, playing through some of the things that went down, whether it was the Embiid sort of chicken wing elbow shoulder to the face, tweaking the knee, the fact that no one else on the Knicks was hitting any shots outside of maybe, you know, OG Anunoby getting to the basket, a couple of threes mixed in, Deuce McBride was good off the bench. But it was pretty much offensively, outside of the offensive rebounding, pretty much a one-man show. And for Brunson to do what he did against that team, because they can play some pretty stout defense themselves, I mean, that's an all-time performance right there.
He scored 47 of their 97 points. You hear that, you probably think, ah, maybe they lost if he's the only guy who could do anything offensively. And he was. Dante DiVincenzo has this one little spurt where he hits two shots, and then you pretty much don't see him for the rest of the game because that next unit, and for all the flowers we've thrown at Tibbs, at least this season, yesterday is another game where, I mean, hats off to, I mean, the job he has done and continues to do as the Knicks head coach. Two guys, really. DiVincenzo, he keeps out of that game, and then Hartenstein, when he gets into the foul trouble. And, I mean, we might hear, I don't know how much of this show you've heard the last two weeks, but I mean, Boomer's been coming in like a rocket when we do the sports minutes after game one which and two, which the Knicks won both of those games.
Where's Precious?
Screaming about where's Precious Achiuwa, and Precious gets some big minutes yesterday. And, I mean, saying he delivered is an understatement. The defensive effort from him and OG Anunoby, and Tibbs was switching them, and they were trapping Embiid, but Joel Embiid disappears in the fourth quarter. He hits no shots. He has one free throw. Joel Embiid, in the beginning of this game, you know, it's kind of him and Brunson going back and forth. And in the fourth quarter, it was all Jalen Brunson. Embiid is just gone, and it's Achiuwa and Anunoby and what they do defensively, and credit to Tibbs, because he kept the, Achiuwa in the entire rest of the game. We kept wondering, when is Hartenstein going to come back? 6 minutes, 5 minutes, four? And he just kept Precious in there. And for some reason, the Sixers, without really the Knicks having a big man on the court, the Sixers couldn't figure out any way for their big man to deliver. Outside of game three, when he put up the 50, Embiid has been invisible in the fourth quarters of these games.
You got to think, and this is not, it's not an excuse, I'm not trying to take credit away from the Knicks, but I would think he's just gassed at the end of these games. And again, that's, listen, that comes
you
with
know
the
what,
territory.
That's his fault. And
that, that's a credit to the Knicks as well for the style of play.
Because we had to hear all year about Tibbs and the minutes, and, well, Hart's going to run out of gas, and, all these guys are going to run out of gas, and which team that I'm sure does load management in this, and let's baby Joel Embiid, this superstar, which team can't come to play in the fourth quarter of these physical brawls and these beatdowns, and it's the Sixers that aren't ready for it, and the Knicks are ready, and they took game four yesterday in that fourth quarter. It's funny, because the only game which they played well in the first quarter was game three, and they lost, but yesterday was another one. It's close. They keep falling behind, you know, 7-8-9, coming back, and in the fourth quarter, they, especially Jalen Brunson, just took over and said, this game is ours. We're going home with a 3-1 lead, and we're probably going to close it out there. We're not coming back to this building.
You would hope. I mean, not that they've already proven they can go down there and win, obviously, and the fan base has been on the move. I mean, you know, and Embiid saying after the game, obviously, he's kind of pissed off about fan. I'm not gonna criticize the fans, but one of those situations, and we'll play the audio coming up probably here in the first hour with Boomer and Gio coming up at the top. But, you know, him saying what he said after the game, I don't even, and maybe I'm off base with this, but I was thinking about this last night. I think it's less a knock on the Sixer fan and more a credit to the Knicks fan. And I think it's not just the Knicks fan. You could throw the Ranger fan in there as well. These fan bases are traveling right now, and especially with these series being somewhat local, Philadelphia more so than D.C., but, you know, D.C.'s not, Yankee fans have been going down to Baltimore forever to watch them play the Orioles. The prices, man. You know, you go on the secondary market, you try to get a ticket to go to the Garden to watch one of these two teams right now. You probably are saving money buying a ticket to a road game, making the drive either to Philadelphia or down to D.C., which a lot of Ranger fans certainly did yesterday. Last night, you could hear them in the crowd. So I think it's more that. Like in this day and age with the secondary market, you put your ticket up for sale, you have no control over who buys that ticket. So the idea that the Sixer fan is somehow going to keep the Knicks fan out, I mean, I get it. You buy the ticket, go to the game, but a lot of people use it as a chance to make some money, sell my tickets for above face value. I think this is the New York fan right now, specifically these two fan bases, many of us being priced out of going to a playoff game at the Garden and using the opportunity, especially for those of us on the Jersey side, we're driving to Philly or D.C., you're probably not going to take you that much longer than it would to get to New York City to go to a game.
Listen, from where we spent a lot of our lives in Jersey, you're just as close to Philly as you
definitely
are to the city.
On Philly,
but
yeah.
There's two sides to that, because in order for a Knicks fan to be able to buy the ticket, it has to be put up for sale on the secondary market.
You can find tickets to almost any game on the secondary market.
Most of them.
The
but
pricing
I do
is a
get, you know,
story.
From the Philly fan standpoint, Embiid after the game, he's not entirely wrong in what he's saying, but it's just one of those battles. You can't take on the fans.
Yeah, you're going to lose.
100% of the time. I get maybe the Sixers fan. Look, this team has been to the playoffs a lot. They don't believe in the core. We've seen that with teams even in New York. We've seen the Yankees fan get disillusioned with the team kind of running it back year after year after year. So I think a lot of Sixers fans are at that point. But here's my problem with Philly fans. They, like their team, could not wait to run their mouths and taunt the Knicks fans before this series. So if you want to run your mouth in the lead up to this series, you better show up. Don't put your ticket on StubHub. Don't go put it out there and let a Knicks fan come into your building, because you know the Knicks fan is hungry. Knicks fans have been desperate for something to root for the last 20 years. If you open that door for them, we're going to come running through it. Like, I was tempted to go to that game yesterday. I couldn't make it. I would love to, if there was a game six, hopefully there's not now, but if there was, like, I was looking at the prices on the market. Like, that's their fault for letting us into that building in droves like that. 10, 15, 20, there's always going to be some presence from the road fans.
Of course.
That was so close to being a Knicks crowd yesterday. And the Knicks fans, even though they may have not been the majority, they were louder. They were more passionate. You're hearing in both games 3 and 4 MVP chants for Brunson, not for the reigning MVP, Joel Embiid, and his team that's trying to come back in the series. So the Knicks fans made their presence known. I'm sure the players felt it. They heard it. So that's on the Sixers fans. If you want to, just sell your tickets and you're not thrilled with the team, then shut up in the week before. And, we have the two best players on the court. It's not just Embiid. Maxey's better and all this stuff.
Maxey's a really good player.
He is a terrific player. And in games 1 and 2, they were better than Brunson. But if that's going to be the case, if you want to talk like that, you have to back it up and put your asses in those seats in game 3 and 4. That's their fault.
Just to illustrate the point, and you could say, well, of course, the prices for a potential game 6 are going to be low now because, the fans are thinking, hey, we may not even make it back here. But I checked prior to the game yesterday, and it's the same kind of point. And I know there's various ticket sites, so this is not exact, but just to give you sort of a cross-section and an idea. So the two remaining home games for the Knicks in this series, obviously you got game 5 coming up tomorrow night. Get in price $347. Right, and if it somehow went to game 7, $363. The get-in price for game 6 in Philly, $117. And that was the same, by the way, for Rangers Capitals. Like, you can't get into the Garden for less than $300 a ticket on the secondary market. You could have gone, maybe sit upstairs, top of the arena, so on and so forth. If you're a Ranger fan, you want to take a trip down to D.C. yesterday to see them finish off a sweep, you could have got in the building for less than $100.
And I get it. That's similar. The Capitals are a team at the end of a run.
Yeah.
They've already won. They probably don't expect much from this team. So I get, that feeling of needing to go to a playoff game in these early rounds as the leagues keep expanding the playoffs. Outside of football, it's probably never going to be there, except for these teams that maybe don't get in as often and they're so hungry for it. But that's why I didn't hear Capitals fans, and maybe it's because we don't pay as much attention to the hockey, but the Sixers fans, maybe it's also because I know so
talking,
many of them.
Yeah,
but
no.
And the players,
there was,
too.
Couldn't be any of that from the Capitol fan.
But there was so much trash talking going into the series, and even after games 1 and game 2, which Philly lost out, but they were right there. There's, good enough positives. They can win this series. They were so cocky and obnoxious after games 1 and 2 that to have that showing from your own fan base in games 3 and 4, it's embarrassing. But that's who Philly is. That's who those people are. They are frauds. One of those teams, you can take the Phillies, maybe not the Eagles, because it's the only team they really care about. The Flyers, the Phillies, and they're the frauds. That's who they are, the Philly frauds. Well, they're just not as passionate. I mean, New York fans in general, but the Knicks and the Rangers fans right now, they want this badly, and they're showing up and they're proving it.
So you've referenced a few times now about the fans talking trash, the fan base. We haven't named any names.
You, Spike! You, Spike!
I'm thinking in the back of your mind somewhere that that name is certainly on the list because, I mean, what, forget off the air, but even on the air leading up to this series, there was some trash talk going on with our now former program director, Spike Eskin. So I know those.
This would be a wonderful week to have him in the building.
Yeah.
I would have loved.
And that's unfortunately not going
to
happen.
Like, imagine if he was walking in this Monday morning and he had to deal with, you know, this and Boomer. I can't even imagine how relentless Boomer would have been on somebody like Spike this morning.
No doubt about it. So I know some of the guys that work here have been giving him the business on Twitter, and back and forth goes both ways. So it's all in good fun, but exciting times for the Knicks fan. And we'll see if they can close it up, close out the series coming up tomorrow night, game 5 at home. So good times right now. Everyone wants to keep making the 94 connection. There's a long way to go. I really am not all about that, but as far as round one goes here, the Rangers taking care of business, the Knicks in good shape, not over till it's over, but can't ask for a better start to the playoffs here for the two MSG teams, and we'll see if the Knicks can finish up, take care of business coming up tomorrow night. All right, we are just off and running. You got CeeLo and Flea. What did we decide many moons ago now last summer?
CeeLo was the Flea-Lo recommendation.
I know I ask you that every time because we only get to do this once in a blue moon. So,
and
yeah.
I actually remembered this time.
CeeLo, right. I think Boomer hated that. So we'll roll with that again this morning. I'm sure he'll come in and give us the business about that in about 45 minutes or so. We'll take you up until then. Boomer and Gio on a Monday morning with much to discuss here on The Fan.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga, Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Alan Jerry, less talk, more rock.
Less talk, more rock. All right, well, you're rocking with CeeLo and Fleek this morning as Alan Jerry are out on this Monday morning with a lot going on here in New York sports. Boomer and Gio coming up at the top of the hour. We'll certainly dive into all of it across the duration of their program this morning. So obviously talking Knicks in the open there. One other sort of angle or aspect of not just Sunday's game, but the series in general. And I don't claim myself as a Knicks fan, all right? But I like to see them play well, so I'm invested in the series, not just because I have to do it for work, but I'm certainly pulling for them yesterday. I'm certainly not rooting for the Sixers. But I guess my point is I can kind of look at it a little bit more objectively than the Knicks fan can. So going back to game 3 and everything that went on with Embiid and certainly the situation with Hartenstein and then, you know, pulling down Mitchell Robinson, him getting hurt, going out and missing yesterday's game. You know, I wasn't at all surprised that A, he wasn't thrown out of the game, and B, a lot of, he should be suspended. Like, that was never happening, especially after the way game 2 ended, the report from the league, the crying from Nick Nurse, from Embiid, the whole thing, so on and so forth. But I will say, watching yesterday's game and him pulling some similar, not as bad, but similar antics, man, he's turned into a very unlikable player quickly here in this series. If you can kind of remove the whole rivalry between the Knicks and the Sixers, just on the surface, I think a great player, no doubt. But some of the crap he's pulling, like, and I know it's the playoffs, Not a great look for me.
No, and it, like, we're all great with physical play. I mean, with the Knicks, we ask for it. That's not what he's doing. Like, the subtle, like, when he thinks nobody's watching, trying. I mean, the Mitchell Robinson play especially. There is nothing he could be thinking on that play other than he's trying to injure Mitchell Robinson. It's a disgusting play. There's no room for it. And he has other ones like that. You know, we knew in Game 3. Like, the refs were committed to making sure he does not get ejected from that game.
Yeah.
So it's,
and that the Sixers were going to get the benefit of the whistle. And the Knicks had to know that going in.
Like, even to the point where after that play, and he already has the flagrant one, and he body checks Anunoby, like, in the backcourt on one play, and there's just nothing. Because, I mean, there's at no point, he could, you know, he could Happy Gilmore a guy, take off a skate and try to stab somebody. He's not getting ejected from that game. He's, I remember at the beginning of this year, you know, there were the rumors about Embiid asking out. And a lot of Knicks fans, not all, but a lot of them,
want him here
now.
Right.
I don't think anybody would want to. I mean, he's just unlikable is the right word. It's just disgusting, dirty. And again, we want physical play, the bumping and the bruising. We want that. But what he's doing is just, like, that shouldn't be in the game. That's where, you know, to bring it to the Rangers, we love physical hockey. A guy like Tom Wilson probably should have been kicked out of the NHL a long time ago, because that guy is just, you know, it's not up to, like, there has to be at least a standard. Again, hit guys, be physical, but not that to try to the kind of sneaky, like, hey,
antics.
That probably crosses the line, and you're starting to get really close to potentially injuring people and, you know, taking them out of games or series and messing with their livelihoods. Like, that's not what we want to see.
Yeah, and you got a little bit of that last night from Tom Wilson, not like to the point of trying to injure somebody, but just a team that clearly was on its way out and just kind of throwing things against the wall, trying to mix it up with Adam Fox after Vincent Trocheck scored a power play goal. So, thankfully, all is well there. Fox, you had a little scare during that game where he took a knee-on-knee hit and went down initially. You're thinking, oh, no, here we go. Kind of like, I think the Knicks fan was worried about Brunson yesterday when all of a sudden he kind of, and that wasn't the result of anything dirty from the Sixers' point. Just sort of took an awkward step with the end of the third quarter, right? Wasn't
yeah.
it the last,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Okay, because they went to the, I knew they went to commercial. I was trying to remember, was that the end of the third quarter? And he limps to the bench, and all of a sudden they go to the commercial, and you're seeing the Nick guys, the guys that cover the team, saying, oh, he went right back to the locker room, and Nick officials went. It didn't look good because it was one of those sort of non-contact, just took an awkward step, and the knee buckled, and you're fearing the worst. And then sure enough, now he comes out, he goes right back into the game, and pretty much picked up where he left off, which was good to see.
Right, he only sits like 2 minutes of game time. But anytime you see a guy go to, you know, if he sits on the bench, okay, he's fine, he's going to come back in. Finding out, like, getting the tweet that he went back to the locker room, you just felt that pin in your stomach of, like, oh, no, because at that point of the game, again, it ended up continuing the entire fourth quarter. If Jalen Brunson's not on the court,
they lose
the game. And the Knicks, they might score 8 points the rest of the quarter.
Yeah.
They had no offense outside of him, but whatever he was dealing with, like, that was the kind of game that it's why New Yorkers and Knicks fans have fallen in love with Jalen Brunson. This has been a tough series for him. The Sixers have guarded him well. He hasn't been able to get the kind of shots that maybe he was used to at the end of the regular season. And, you know, we know playoff basketball is different from regular season basketball, but Jalen Brunson is a guy who has thrived in the playoffs before. Maybe now it's a different role. You know, he's the guy to look to on a Knicks team without Julius Randle and no secondary source of scoring whatsoever. And it took him a little bit of time to adjust in this series, but yesterday was the point where Game 3 was the improvement. He's starting to figure it out, and yesterday was the day where it just, you know, his open looks were starting to fall, which was not the case in Games 1 and Games 2, and he just figured out the inside game. You know, he's posting up well, the fadeaway, the mid-range was all there, getting to the basket. He looked like the Jalen Brunson from the regular season, and it's awesome. For me, I'm too young to remember Ewing in his prime. So
okay.
I really remember Ewing, like, you know, 98, 99.
At the end.
So it's not the same Patrick Ewing that people who saw his entire career remember. So to me, already, he's not even completed his second season. Jalen Brunson is both the best and my favorite Nick of my lifetime. So to see him have that playoff moment yesterday, and no disrespect to Bernard King, I've nothing but love for what I've heard about Bernard King, but I didn't watch him play. So, like, I'm thrilled as a Knicks fan that I got to see my guy go and give you that performance yesterday. So now the name in the record book is the player that I have watched the last 2 years and hopefully continue to watch for a long time. The attitude, everything about the way he plays the game is just awesome.
And then, not that this was a surprise, but the way he handled it in the post game, just basically deflecting anything having to do with now having this single game record for the playoffs and just making it about what they need to take care of next.
Yeah, he said he'll look back on it
down
the road.
Right, end of his career, end of the season, so on and so forth. But they kept pressing him on it, and he basically was like, you know, unless Bernard King can come out and help us win game five, which is great. You know, it's like, I think McMonagle made the point. It was like very Jeter-esque. And I know that'll probably make you sick because as
it's just funny.
You don't want to hear it equated to a Yankee, but just as far as, you know, the character and the way you're handling yourself with the media and keeping the focus on the road ahead, which is what's most important right now.
Yeah, even in game, you know, when he gets that elbow from Embiid, he's chirping back, you know, what was that for?
I was going to bring that up.
So he's not doing anything during
that.
The response, but he's, you know, you're not pulling one over on me. Yeah. Like, if, you know, you might be, you know, however many inches taller or much bigger, you know, you step to me, I'm going to come right back up in your face.
Yeah, and he did
he's not backing
he
down.
Did not, exactly, did not back down, did not stand down, which is great to see. And look, I'm sure he knows his teammates have his back because he's given up some size if those two were to get into it a little bit. So, and I, you know, at least Embiid didn't try to mix it up with anything further after that play with Brunson, because I thought what went on with Josh Hart, and I know Embiid can make the case, oh, I tripped over him and I didn't mean to step on him, you know, and me, oh, sorry, I didn't, to me, that it was that second step, and that's where I feel like right now he's like right on the line there of, let me see how much I can get away with. And I get it happens fast, so maybe it's even subconscious a little bit. That one bothered me. I was actually surprised Hart didn't react more to that than he did in that moment.
Yeah, I could believe that if it wasn't every single time this guy is tangled up in something.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
every now and then, you're right, it happens so fast. Like, not every, you know, movement or some stuff has to be, you know, just your reaction, your instinct. But with Embiid, it's somehow every time he's getting physical with somebody, yeah, he finds a way to have that extra, you know, that step comes down hard, that it's a stomp, or that elbow not just extends, he finds a way, like the Draymond Green, where he knows exactly where the part of the player's body is, and he knows right how to elbow you in the face or, you know, in the stomach. He knows where his body is and what he's about to hit on the other guy. So that's why he's now gotten to the point where I can't believe, like, the Bogdanovich play. That was clearly unintentional with Batum. It's unfortunate, but there was nothing. They're just battling for the loose ball. It happens. With Embiid now, the benefit of the doubt is completely gone.
And only because you just mentioned him, Bogdanovich going out, not returning, and obviously playing without Mitchell Robinson and Hartenstein's in foul trouble. I mean, the Knicks leaned on the depth yesterday. We talked about Achiuwa already. Deuce McBride, good minutes again off the bench. So, I mean, look, we can say Embiid and Maxey are the more talented, better overall players, 1-2, and they've had good series overall. But I think the Knicks just have been churning that depth, getting the, I mean, you know, Josh Hart has been, that was a scoring threat in the first three games. Really
gave
you
17 rebounds yesterday.
Yeah, nothing offensively yesterday, but
right,
still
only
has
points
a,
come from the free throw
yeah,
line.
Still has a big impact on the game. So it's great to see, and you hope they can, you know, finish it off quickly rather than extending the series. And I'm not touching the money. I'm not putting the cart before the horse, but just if we're going to kind of look ahead and down the road a little bit at what could come next, the Pacers all of a sudden up 3-1 on the Bucks without Giannis. So not to say that.
And Dame.
Right, exactly. You're right. I left that out. But they've had the whole series without Giannis so far. But yeah, but Dame down now as well. So look, this first round series was a tough draw for the Knicks. We talked about that when they moved up into the 2 seed at the end of the regular season. And you knew it was either going to be Miami before Jimmy Butler got hurt or Embiid. So for them to kind of work their way through this series, not to say that potential round two against the Pacers would be a cakewalk or anything like that. But when we talked about potentially having to go through the gauntlet in the Eastern Conference, probably from a matchup standpoint, a little bit better than if it was the Bucks with Giannis and Dame.
Yeah, I mean, as a Knicks fan, you'd probably feel good going up against just about anybody right now, because this is a Sixers team that, with no Mitchell Robinson and no Isaiah Hartenstein for the last 14 minutes of the game, you're completely shutting down Joel Embiid offensively. So the Knicks probably feel great about matching up with anybody right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they're not afraid of the Pacers. But, man, like, I keep going back to it. It is so satisfying for me just sitting here and I'm thinking back to yesterday. You know, it's Monday morning, the start of a brand new week. And I'm now, because I just mentioned, I'm thinking now about that fourth quarter. Like, they embarrassed the Sixers and Embiid. That brings me, as a Knicks fan and a New Yorker, so much joy and satisfaction to do that to that. Because, listen, Embiid is the better player. As much as I love Jalen Brunson, Joel Embiid is the better player that
and
they did.
Different
and
players,
I don't care about anything, because he played well the first three quarters. And in the fourth quarter, this guy, you know, the knock on him is that he can't get out of the second round. And the Knicks are wasting. They're like, no, 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 forget the second round. We're embarrassing you on your home court in the first round. So I don't think they care about the Bucks, the Pacers. They're not afraid of anybody right now.
Yeah.
And whether that team is better than them or not, they play the game with this fearlessness that you have to love.
There's nothing not to love, and we've talked about that throughout much of the season, and the identity, and that starts with Tom Thibodeau. And look, maybe you touched on it a little bit already. Maybe we had a little bit of concern or worry about, okay, well, can the style of play hold up, all the minutes, so on and so forth. And, you know, that question will be answered the deeper they get into the playoffs, but like you already made the point about crunch time, fourth quarter, late, and right now they're the better conditioned team. They're the mentally tougher team. Like, they're checking all those boxes that people were criticizing them for in the regular season. Now, look, there's a long way to go. It's only round one. And, you know, you could talk about potentially down the road seeing some tougher opponents. But, I mean, man, there is a lot to like about where they're at and sort of how it projects deep into the playoffs here. And I, you know, looking back to the regular season and when things were kind of going bad and Randle was down and Ananobi was down as well, no matter where they finish, you know, can they really stack up against some of the best teams? Like, and if they potentially faced Boston in an Eastern Conference, like, the Celtics are a talented team, but, I mean, that's a team that I've seen cave and lose some games. To me, Tatum's a really good player, but, like, if you're going to tell me mental toughness and the intangibles down the stretch of a game or a series, like, I could absolutely put the Knicks up against the Celtics or pretty much any team in the East right now.
Yeah, the Celtics are the only one that I think comes, you know, close to town. Because the Bucks are down, definitely Giannis and probably Dame the rest of the way too. They can't match up. You know, we've seen Jaylen Brown wilt in the playoffs. We've seen Porzingis have moments where he just completely disappears. We've seen Mazzulla, the coach, have this look on his face of when Spoelstra is last year running circles around him, like, whoa, 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 like, I didn't know any of this was on the quiz. Like, here's the two things we do. If they're not doing them, I don't know what to pull out of the bag next. So you have to feel good, not just about what happened, because what happened Sunday is incredible if you're a Knicks fan. Yeah, I understand why we're excited right now thinking about it. And you said, I don't want to touch the money, especially in this studio.
We're not guaranteeing anything.
Of course not. But this is the time where you have 2 days instead of thinking about that Sixers matchup. You are going to dream a little bit of, like, hey, why not the Knicks? The why not us? Like, this team right now, they look like they could battle, and they're just a nightmare. And the macro view too of, you know, in the NBA, they're disproving all this. Well, I mean, you have to manage your stars in the regular season. You have to give them nights off. You know, you can't possibly give it your A effort 82 entire games in a regular season. There's just no way to do that and then sustain it in the postseason, because we didn't see guys do that, you know, for 50, 60, 70 years before the last decade. And the Knicks are saying, screw that. We're going to beat you and into oblivion for all 48 minutes, and maybe you'll beat us, but it's going to hurt.
Knicks are old school that way. So far, so good. So we'll look ahead to a game 5 coming up tomorrow night, and less rest for Embiid with his knee, because you don't have the 2 days off. You just have the one. See if the Knicks can capitalize that on their home floor. All right, take a break. When we come back, we'll dive into the baseball a little bit. Also want to get Fleegs' thoughts on the NFL draft over the weekend. I know we did round one already on Friday, but some other things to digest and discuss as we head towards Boomer and Geo coming up at the top of the hour here on a Monday morning.
Al and Jerry, the only men in your lives you can count on.
Well, you got to count on myself and Fleegelman this morning, at least for the next, 16 minutes or so, until we get to Boomer and Geo coming up at the top of the hour to get you started here on a Monday morning. It is Fleelo on the Fan as we get our week started here, and we did a lot of Knicks already here so far in the show. I want to get a temperature check on the Mets with Fleegs here, big Met fan. So outside of the Vientos walk-off yesterday, and we can touch on that in a second, kind of talk about where we think things are going with him. So sort of a roller coaster ride early on here for the Mets. Bad start. They get the ship righted. All of a sudden they look and, hey, it's great. Feel good story. The lineup's figuring things out. They're getting some decent pitching. They went out west, hang a couple wins on the Dodgers. And now we kind of come back down to earth a little bit, and in come the Cardinals over the weekend. And yesterday, you know, it takes Harrison Bader tying the game in the 11th for them to avoid the sweep. And you get your Sunday moment there at Citi Field. But are we believing in this team right now, or you still have your question marks and your doubts, especially as it pertains to the pitching staff?
I thought before the season this was a team that was going to win 83 or 84 games. They're now 1/6 of the season. They're on pace for 84 games. Now, it's been maybe a little more extreme. I didn't expect the five-game losing streak.
The highs and the lows.
And then getting quickly four games above. So, you know, I thought maybe it was going to be like, you know, a mid-sized roller coaster, like a Space Mountain. It's been more like a King Ka where they're all over the place. But overall, they are right about where I expected them to be.
And with Vientos, you know, the only reason he comes up, obviously, is Starling Marte going on the bereavement list. He gets into the game yesterday. All of a sudden, he's 2-for-2. And he comes up with the big walk-off home run. So that was the storyline. One of the storylines at the end of spring training was the fact that they didn't, quote-unquote, come north with him on the roster. And you had Stern saying, well, he's going to play for us at some point this year. He'll be a big league player. Now that he's up, he has the big hit. Do you think they're going to find a spot for him consistently moving forward, or is he going to be right back on the bus to, where am I?
Syracuse.
Thank you. I wanted to say Buffalo, and I'm like, that's not right. We did that already. Syracuse.
I've never been the biggest Vientos fan, to be honest. Not just because the scouting community, I try to trust those guys. They haven't been high on the guy.
Yeah.
He was only a top 10 prospect in the Mets system because the Mets had an awful farm system. But this kid has earned a chance to play with what he did last year, with what he's now done this year. So I have to think, you know, you would hope David Stearns, we don't know a ton about him yet. When they call him up knowing it's only for 3 or 4 days, they have to at least thought, well, if he does something in these 3 or 4 games, which he's already done, and Mendoza said he's probably going to start on Monday night. Like, they had to be aware, well, if he hits, the optics of if they send him back are horrible. Like, it's just... it's not the right time to tick off the fan base. They can't get people to show up to Citi Field. Like, it would just be an unnecessary... if they weren't planning on, okay, maybe keeping him around, then call up somebody else that you can sit on the bench for 3 days and then option them down and just don't even use whoever you need to fill the roster spot for Marte while he's not here. I would hope that they had a plan for this, but when I look at the roster, it's tough to think of one. Because as much as Mets fans don't like Joey Wendell, they're not sending him down because then they would have no backup shortstop or second baseman.
Yeah.
So that's obviously out. Would they send down DJ Stewart as a minor league option? Brett Beatty obviously has a minor league option. Neither one of them has been bad enough to warrant a demotion, but something's got to give here. And again, I just think the optics, if they send Vientos down, and this is before he could have a couple more hits tonight if he does that. If he comes up and in 3 games goes 6-for-8, with a walk-off home run, and you send
him
down.
You next time we need somebody. Enjoy Syracuse. Hopefully it warms up for you up there.
Then you deserve the boos and the vitriol that's going to come from the crowd. You know, if you send him down Tuesday afternoon when you get on the field Tuesday night against the Cubs. Like, I would hope they're not that stupid. But, again, when I look at the roster, it's tough to find a spot.
Interesting little predicament when push comes to shove and they have to make that move. So they'll get started at a 4-game set with the Cubs here at Citi Field. The Yankees just battered their way past the Brewers over the weekend up there in Milwaukee after an ugly loss on Friday. Obviously, they come back with consecutive 15-run games, so the offense humming all of a sudden here. And
it's kind of reversed for them from a couple years ago, right? You know, we were used to series where the Yankees win the first two, they obliterate a team, and they give you the punt game on Sunday,
that's
which
ticked
fans off. Boone kind of gave you the punt game on Friday, which was not even before the game. Like, hey, extra innings, the game is right there. And he says, nah, that's okay. I'm just going to put Michael Tonkin in and then leave him
Yankees
in here to
debut.
Blow it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Saturday and Sunday, the offense, they respond, and they just obliterate the Brewers. And don't look now, but number 99. Getting going a little
bit. Yeah, I wasn't buying into
that home run yesterday was a moonshot.
Everyone's, it must be hurt. It must be something. And I know you had the toe last year and then the, you know, whatever you want to call it, an oblique, or they never put a name on it, the abdominal issue in spring training. But
guys have slumps.
Right. Extrapolate's not the right word. We put too much emphasis on the early season struggle sometimes because I get it. We've been waiting for months for baseball, and it's like, well, why isn't this guy hitting right away? There must be something
wrong. And baseball's a game where we've always been trained for years to look at the numbers, and in the early season, those are the only numbers you have.
But, you know, you get into July and August, and there might be a 5 or 6 week stretch where a guy's hitting, you know, .150 with no production. So it does happen, and it is good to see Judge hopefully coming out of that, and obviously the lineup as a whole producing quite a bit in Milwaukee over the weekend, and now they've won 8 out of 9 series. So you can poke the Yankees here or there. There have been a couple of not-so-great moments. You referenced the Friday night loss, but they're 9 games over .500, and they're winning series left and right.
And this will be a fun test.
Yeah, going to Baltimore, 4-game set. Orioles are legit. We know that with all their young talent. a place that Judge usually hits very well, Gleyber Torres as well. But those
who also got hot over the weekend.
Yeah, against bad Oriole teams. This is a good Oriole team, so we'll see how that works out. Quickly, and I know I'm squeezing it in before we take our last break. We'll have a little bit at the end. Give me your overall thoughts on the draft weekend for the Jets and your favorite pick out of all the guys that they took.
Overall, it's good. I like both teams' drafts, so put it at Jets and Giants.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, I love Olu. I'm a Penn State guy. I like that the Jets win tackle. But the one I'll focus on is Malachi Corley, the first pick they trade up in the third round.
The Yak King.
Yeah. If you watch this kid, you know, again, I'm like Eddie. We love college football, so I have seen Western Kentucky play. The kid is just unreal. Like, he is somebody, obviously, the speed is there and the elusiveness, but he's somebody who, almost like that Knicks team we talked about, hey, I might be looking at somebody who's, you know, 3 inches taller than me and 40 pounds bigger than me, I'm going to run right through him anyway. And Salah had the line when they drafted him that if he had a relative standing on the goal line, he would just run them right over. So Jets fans, watching this guy play is going to be very excited. They can get the ball in his hands, which you trust Aaron Rodgers to be able to do, then he should make stuff happen. An offense that already obviously includes Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall and hopefully Mike Williams.
I usually these draft calls, the behind-the-scenes stuff are a bit much, but I like the one with the CFL kid. And I don't know if you saw it.
It's
the
an
weekend.
Incredible story,
right,
too.
The story, which we don't have time to break down, but I love that they put their security guy on the phone with him. I'm blanking on his name, but I remember...
I forget the last name.
I remember he's been there forever, so when I was covering the team, I'd see him quite a bit. But for him to hop on the phone and get choked up talking to this kid was pretty cool. And I know he's older than some other prospects. He's not necessarily a kid, but to me, they're kids.
You,
I'm 38.
You know, we hear from the beat writers, well, they were captivated by his story and everything he's been through, what he's overcome, and... you know, just getting to know him in those few minutes. And you hear from the security guy, he met with him for 15 minutes.
Right.
And obviously, at 15 minutes, made a real impact.
Very cool. So I'm sure we'll delve into that a little bit more as we go along. Right now, we got to do the Odyssey Sports Minute. It's brought to you by Jackpocket. Order official state lottery games on your phone. It is Amy Lawrence. Normally, Eddie will give a percentage for Al here when I fill on the show. So he's giving you a 50% shot on the topic. The general topic, that is, but only 10% for the specific topic. So take your crack there, Fleeks.
I was going to say Knicks. Maybe NBA playoffs then in general, including the Knicks.
Okay.
It's the dynamic duo of Al and Jerry, the superheroes of WFAN.
All right, a couple minutes away from Boomer and Geo here. Fleelo wrapping up on a Monday morning warm-up show. So you were just telling me, I saw the notification over the weekend. There's so much going on. Didn't get a chance to check out the story. MLB, the memo to the players about the uniform fiasco was leaked. And the way in which you described it was best as far as Nike was concerned. So I'll hand it over to you for that.
Yeah, so there's a couple of quotes in this memo. MLB absolves Fanatics is for Nike. They throw them under the bus. They run them over. They back it up. They run them over again. Like, they just completely trash Nike in this memo to the player.
Oh,
it's entirely a Nike issue. They innovated something that didn't have to be innovated. So Major League Baseball accepts no responsibility here. They obviously have
Shocker.
To prove it, whatever. And Fanatics, their partner that they have the multi-million-dollar agreement. Everything they did was perfect, too. The jerseys are awful. Players hate them. Fans hate them. A bunch of teams haven't worn certain alternates because they don't have.
I could not believe this.
But nothing is the fault. And listen, I'm sure Nike is at fault too. But like, for the other parties in here to be completely absolved of any responsibility whatsoever, like, come on. And that's, I'm sure, why the players probably looked at this and rolled their eyes too.
Right, and why they leaked the memo, perhaps.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Somebody
did.
That.
Whatever. But I couldn't believe that. I mean, look, not having the product available to the masses, to the fan bases, is one thing. Forget the design, how they look. But you're telling me some teams, Major League, they haven't received certain versions of their own uniforms yet. We're about to hit May. Like, how is that possible?
Right, it's bad enough if they don't have them.
You can't produce like 40, 50 uniforms for a Major League team?
I don't get. And again, this is the same company that Caleb Williams is drafted on Thursday. Let's go sell a billion jerseys and get them shipped out to people within 2 weeks. Caitlin Clark last month. Get all these jerseys made and ship them out to people. Then these are the ones for the actual professional teams. They're supposed to be wearing
not
your
available.
Product on the field. It's a multi-billion dollar company in this industry, and they don't have them.
That is wild. I don't claim to understand a lot about big business or manufacturing or how all this works, but the idea that you could essentially be a jersey representative and manufacturer for Major League Baseball, they're a month into the season, and you got pro teams still missing their uniform. I mean, that is wild.
It's the kind of thing that drives us all nuts of like, hey, I know we have this job to do, but You know, we'll get around to it when
we'll
it. Until then, you got a deal. You know, listen, Boomer Geo will do a point at some show today. They might just decide to stroll in at 7:45 instead of 6 o'clock. Yeah. You just gotta, you know, fill the time until then.
It is wild. And also them saying that they hope to have it corrected by the start of next year.
Right, it's April.
What are we doing here? That's a long way off. Like,
should be able to do it.
How
by
about next week?
Yeah. Every team's next homestand, the jerseys are fixed.
Wow, that's a bad one. That's a bad one. But hey, you know what?
It's so surprising,
it's easy for
too,
us to poke
from
fun
a run
now
by Rob Manfred, because he's usually so on top of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, look, we can throw slings and arrows at him, but, I mean, it sounds like it goes a little bit beyond Major League Baseball here. Sounds like it's the manufacturing
entirely
companies
entirely a Nike issue.
Entirely.
WFAN, WFAN-FM, WFAN-FM HD1 New York, and Odyssey Sports Station.